Empire.
Triple Play Fantasy's baseball show with D. Mindy, Lil Cheesecake, and Doc starts now.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome in to another episode of the Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Show, a proud member of Empire and the Empire Media Network. A different voice behind the hum mic today. It's Doc, and it's just me, myself, and I. You guys can't see the graphics. I'm looking around. No D. Mendy. He's on his honeymoon. You wouldn't even know by how much he's been on his phone. And we have a special dessert coming back next week for our 100th episode. But it's by myself hosting, just the news and notes today. We're going to have a great show talking about our TGFBI first year experiences with Marty Tallman of Triple Play Fantasy, co-host Between the Seams, and Jacob Eason from FOV Sports. So make sure you stay tuned for that. After that, we're going to go to our bullpen for the question of the week. Which hitter that isn't Shohei Ohtani would be the best on the other side of the ball? And then we will have our game of the week revealed at the end of the week or at the end of the show. But we're going to talk some news and notes. And the first little bit of news, Derek Jeter enshrined in the Hall of Fame. I don't think this comes as a surprise to anyone. Jeter spent his entire 20-year career with the New York Yankees and had 3,465 hits, 260 home runs, arguably the most iconic Yankee, one of the most iconic Yankees in team history. I think well-deserved, even Red Sox fans saying that. So congrats to Mr. Jeter. Next little bit of news, staying with the Yankees. Gerrit Cole was pulled from his recent start with left hamstring tightness. He's not scheduled right now to undergo an MRI, so hopefully he can make his next start. As we're winding down towards the end of the season, the Yankees are fighting for a wild card spot, so they will definitely need Mr. Cole to be healthy. Next little bit of news and notes, staying with the injury bug. Eloy Jimenez has a significant bone bruise in his right knee after getting hit with a foul ball in the visitor's dugout. It's an injury you don't hear about every day. Now, right now he's currently listed as day-to-day, although manager Tony La Russa did say that is a deep bone bruise. Hopefully, Jimenez does not need an IL stint. He had missed the first 4 months and change of the season recovering from a left torn pectoral muscle. For those that don't remember, he tore that trying to rob a home run in spring training, one of the more boneheaded plays we've seen. Next little bit of news and notes, Marcell Ozuna agreed to a pretrial diversion program that could lead to dismissal of his domestic violent case. Ozuna would have a 6-month supervision, which could be reduced to 3 months and undergo a 24-week family violence intervention program. While the criminal charges may be dropped, Ozuna could still face a lengthy suspension from the MLB. I think I speak for Cheesecake, David, and myself. If these allegations are true, even if the criminal charges are dropped, that Ozuna should not have a future in Major League Baseball. I think that sets a very poor example that if you can play a sport well, that you're exempt from the rules that society has to face. And hopefully this is a lesson learned to him that he should never commit a crime like this the rest of his life. Staying with the serious news, Mets suspended acting general manager Zach Scott, who was arrested last week while driving intoxicated. A twist to this story was that he was coming from Sandy Alderson's house. Now, he is on administrative leave while the investigation plays out. The Mets have no further comment, saying it is a criminal case and we are going to let that charge proceed. However, the higher ups deem it out. Once again, I think anyone that is listening to this, there is no room for drinking and driving. And it's a shame that adults who have known better for a while can't follow the same rules. There's Uber and Lyft out there. You're the general manager of a Major League Baseball team. You probably will have people lining up wanting to drive you places. And the last little bit of news and notes, once again, staying somber. Zach Britton is undergoing Tommy John surgery. He had left elbow soreness, probably explains why he was not doing well in the closer role and took himself out of it. He is most likely out the 2022 season, obviously out the rest of this year. Hopefully he makes a full recovery and is a somewhat of picture of what he was in the 2023 season. We're not all here to talk bad news, because if you liked hearing me host, make sure you never miss a podcast by clicking that subscribe button wherever you get your Triple Play content. Spotify, Anchor, Apple Pod. Make sure you follow us on the socials at Trip Play Fantasy. I do a great job running social media, and David isn't here to put me down. But we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube. We have a lot of great sub-series, Between the Seams with Marty and Mac, Coach's Corner, Movie Minutes. The list goes on and on. I've even done a couple videos myself, and we got Michael Govier contributing some content as well. One of the most entertaining guys in the industry. Once again, make sure you follow us on the socials, because I want us to get a huge following in the week that David is out. I'd love to rub it in his face. Now, you know that feeling when you see that you climb up in the TGFBI standings? Maybe you get within the top 50, the top 25, the top 10. Maybe you were even number one at some point. That's the feeling we want to provide. Thank you to everybody that has listened to us each and every week. If you're listening to the podcast version, we got to pay the bills, and then we will be going to our TGFBI year one with Marty Tallman and Jacob Eason. We are live. There is a handsome man in the middle of that photo. At least Marty and I think so. Lance Lynn, the guy that we all love. And if you didn't see it, you see it again. Look, there's a lot of things that we don't have in common here. Marty, Jordan, myself. The one thing that we do have in common, it's our first year in TGFBI. But I want to introduce these gentlemen properly. And the first one is, we welcome in a man of Triple Play Fantasy who is making his third appearance on here. Now, this man has been touring a lot around LA, skateboarding, eating some good food, an ambassador of afternoon baseball, the co-host of Between the Seams with Marty and Mac. I don't know his height, but we welcome in Marty Tallman. What's going on, Marty?
As always, you guys have the best introductions in the business, so I'm doing very well. Thank you. And to answer the question that everyone asks me once they hear my last name, which is Tallman, it is, the answer is 5'11". So almost 6 feet tall. I say that when I wake up every morning, I'm 6 feet, and then gravity takes me down to about a 5'11 by the end of the day.
I was going to say, you know, 5'11 is one of those things like on the apps, like especially the dating apps, where you just round up. You're tall compared to me. But the other guy on my right, we welcome in a guy who's ahead of the curve, a contributor for Roto Baller. He might be the youngest member of TGFBI, but he's here to school us today. The founder of Field Division Sports, FOV till I die. We welcome in Jordan Eisen. What's going on?
Hey guys. Yeah, I've heard a lot about your intros. Every time I listen to one of your episodes, I hear them, obviously. It feels good to have one for myself now.
Yeah, and Jordan, you know, appreciate you coming on. This is your first time. You know, David and I had the pleasure of being on the FOV podcast as well. Great stuff to check out. And fellas, we lost our TGFBI virginity. We can say that. And true. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I've thoroughly enjoyed my first year. And shout out to Justin Mason for putting this together.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a lot of work that doesn't get the credit that it deserves. And I'm a big fantasy baseball guy, and it's just been addicting, the whole process. And since this is all of our first years together, we're going to talk about our experiences and lessons for next year. And we're talking baseball. I know football is tonight, but we're here to dive in first year at TGFBI. So the first thing is, what pick did you have? And Marty, I want to start with you. And who are some notable names in your league?
All right. Absolutely. And before I do that, Jordan, you and I may have been, were we on the panel together for TGFBI before this started?
I mean, I was on Potapalooza.
Yeah.
I don't remember you being there.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just forgetting.
Maybe it might have been the second. I was on the board with the second youngest person. So,
Daniel Rotter.
Yeah. Who it is. Just kidding, Jordan. Anyway, back to my TGFBI experience. And yes, first off, Justin Mason. Yeah, number one. We'll start there. Thank you for putting it on. For all of us fantasy baseball dorks, it's like, you know, it's like the Super Bowl, but it lasts for like 6 months. So it's actually pretty amazing. And for I was in the 28th league or league 28, and I had the 12th pick of the draft. So started pretty late. I was hoping, I just didn't want 10, 11, or 12. You know, or no, yeah.
Is that taking a shot at me who had 10?
Yeah, exactly. That's the only ones I didn't want. But as far as my league, it was actually it was pretty stacked. Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ, Will Garofalo from Pitcher List, Mike Mahar from Fantasy Pros, Pierre Camus, I think that's how you say it. But he's the lead writer and editor for Rotoballer. But most importantly, we had the man, the myth, the legend these days, Mr. Tanner Bell, a.k.a. Ooh. At Smart Fantasy BB. He co-wrote the book, The Process, with Jeff Zimmerman. He's currently sitting, not any spoiler alert, but he's currently sitting number one overall.
Wow. Wow. Holding up to that name.
Yeah. He's a baller. So, League 28 showing out with the number one, but I'm number two in my league and I'll take that.
Okay. What are you overall?
I'm number two in my league, dude. It's fine. It doesn't really matter what that number is. at one point it was a lot better, but now it's 107.
Oh, yeah, you were in the top 30 for a while.
Yeah, well, top 14, but whatever, I don't care. It's fine.
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, look, anytime you could be in top 14 or top 15 and there's 450 people, you know you're doing something right at some point. Jordan, what about you? What pick were you in? Who were some notable names in your league?
Yeah, so I was pick number 8. I grabbed Trey Turner there. And yeah, I just want to say thank you to Justin Mason. Really cool guy. I've gotten to talk with him quite a bit, and it's always fun to talk to Justin. But as for who's in my league, honestly, I've been trying to familiarize myself with the fantasy industry, and I definitely know quite a few names. But coming into TGFBI, the only one in my league that I recognized was Scott Pianowski. It's Scott Pianowski, so pretty big deal there. But we've also got Casey Varner, Ed DiCaria, Edwin Turnage. There's a lot of guys. And I mean, I've gotten to know them and now I definitely know all their names. Also Alex Chamberlain. Can't forget him.
Oh yeah. He's good. Guys got some good people in your league. Wait till I tell you mine.
Yeah. I'm very happy with mine. It's been a really fun experience.
Well, that's awesome to hear. And I think the most important thing is having fun. You know, there's obviously bragging rights, but it's not like you're putting up money for this. I had a stacked league with a lot of people that have been on our pod. Casey Bubba, Carlos Marcano, our good friend, Doug Ishikawa, Ryan Bloomfield, Zach Waxman. And I had 10th pick.
That's a who's who, man.
Yeah. And to be honest, I didn't know that you could have a pick preference. So, Marty, I totally would have gotten out of that 10th pick.
I did, and it didn't matter. The Kentucky Derby style still got me. So,
It's something that, and as we talk about our lessons and experiences for next year, that's something we definitely want to touch on. Now, Jordan, I want to go back to you because you had mentioned that you took Trey Turner for your first pick. So this is a kind of 2-in-1 right here. We got our good friend Mike Carter checking in. What's up, guys?
Mike,
wish you were in my league. We would have had a lot of smack talk between us. But Jordan, I kind of wanted to ask you these two parters. One, give me some of your best and worst picks.
All right. So there definitely are some like decent picks. But other than those decent picks, basically all of my picks were my worst picks. It was a really terrible draft. I felt decent about it once it was done. But like I have the likes of like Luis Castillo, Carlos Carrasco, Steven Strasburg. Those were three of I picks. Jesus Lazaro is here. My whole starting pitching was just decimated. Like after a month or two, I had like a 6 ERA and I just could not come back from that. My closers were Joaquin Soria, Amir Garrett, Sean Doolittle, and, Will Smith too. Will Smith and Jordan Romano have stuck on my team the whole season. They're some of the only ones, but I did have some decent picks that I do want to kind of toot my own horn about.
That's what this is for.
Yeah. I grabbed Max Muncy. I was really high on him coming in this season and glad I got him there. Germán Márquez, I got really late. I was surprised how late I got him. And I mean, it's definitely been a bumpy ride and he hasn't fully contributed purely good stats to my team, but where I got him, I'm happy. He's probably been I guess Luis Castillo, but he's been my second best pitcher. So that's more about who else I have on my team, but it worked out. I also grabbed Justin Turner really late. I like that pick. I'm just scrolling through. And then really late, like the pick after, like Joey Wendell, Jake Diekman, Chris Archer was picked. I was just like, eh. And I grabbed Jordan Romano because Kirby Yates wasn't injured yet. And I just thought that Jordan Romano, maybe he could take over. He was really good in 2020. And then Kirby Yates, like the day after I took Romano, and he's definitely been a very big fixture on my team.
So Jordan, let me ask you, what was your strategy? Did you have a hitter heavy, a pitcher heavy approach? Did you try to mix it up?
So something that I wanted to do in all of my leagues and kind of started as I was doing TGFBI, I wanted to get my steals early and starting pitching early as well. And then some sort of DH at some point who would boost me in batting gap or, and then just fill in the rest of the hitting categories later on. Do that. So my first picks were Trey Turner steals, Luis Castillo pitcher, Al Tucker steals, Carlo pitcher, Steven Strasburg pitcher, Alvarez DH. So that went well, like when it was happening. Of course, Carrasco and Strasburg did not work out at all. For the first couple of months, Luis Castillo looked terrible. I didn't drop him, which I'm very thankful for. But I did execute that strategy pretty well, I think. And then another part of it was I wanted Max Muncy to kind of like free up the loss that I took in position flexibility from taking a TEH. So I think I had the right process, just the results were terrible.
I mean, that's a big thing is, you know, everybody has their strategy and the results won't always be there, but you stick to the process and the methods of how you evaluate these players. Mr. 6 foot on a good day, you must have had some pretty good picks to be number 14 at one time. So let me hear some of your hits. Let me hear some of your misses and then the strategy of which you drafted.
All right. So we'll start off with my number one pick. So it was Trevor Story. And at the time, to get him with the 12th pick of the draft, I like that because, and you know, Jordan already alluded to it, the goal is really for me in the first 5-6 rounds is to get elite pitching and players that are going to be able to hit 20 plus home runs, keep a good batting average, and also get your 20 steals. So if I can get that, you know, in the first couple, that's what I'm going to be going for. I'm going to start with my best pick of the draft. And about halfway through the season, it was Spencer Turnbull. I got him in the 24th round. He was actually doing really well for me all the way back there. Eventually, as you know, he got hurt the rest of the season. So, you know, that was the beginning of the end, as they say. I also really liked Jesus Aguilar, who I got in the 25th round. He's currently second in the NL, in RBI. So I like getting him all the way back there. But my best pick had to be Avisaíl García. So got him in the 27th round, third to last round. So basically free. He's batting 266 with 25 home runs, 79 RBIs and 7 steals. I was doing some digging around here and he's one of 13 players that have 25 home runs and at least 7 stolen bases. So
wow.
All the way back there, I will take it. Transitioning to my bad pick. So number one, I made my second round pick was a mistake. Aaron Nola.
Wait. Is Aaron Nola the most Jekyll and Hyde pitcher this year? Like he's overtaken Germán Márquez as the most stressful pitcher to own. Like he'll throw a complete game shutout and then get against like a team like the Cardinals and then get bombed for like 7 runs against the Rangers. I don't understand it.
I know. And coming into the season, I had him ranked in front of Lucas Giolito.
I can't blame you. I was high on Nola as well.
So starting there, Aaron Nola, and mostly because, I mean, Walker Buehler still on the board, Brandon Woodruff still on the board. So I know it's like Monday morning quarterback or whatever, but you know, it's hard to look at that. And then who was some other bad picks here as we roll through? I don't know. That one just hurt the absolute most. So I'll just stick with Aaron Nola.
Now, what was your strategy? You said you went Trevor Story first round, you went Aaron Nola second round. So were you trying to split it between hitting and pitching? Was it kind of best player available?
Yeah. So coming into the draft, I had the idea that I wanted to really get as many starting pitchers and an elite reliever, you know, within the first 10 picks. So that was my goal. But I ended up being actually just pretty balanced. So in the first 10 rounds, I drafted 5 pitchers. 2 of them were closers. And then in the first 15 rounds, I had 13 pitchers. So, yeah. I split it.
Okay. All right. I like it. And some good balance. You know, it's funny. I didn't like my team coming out of TGFBI and I started very, very slow. And I hit on some really good picks that performed later in the season. Marty, I got to give a shout out to our guy, Lance Lynn. Got him in the fourth. I got Marcus Semien in the eighth, who has just been killing it.
One. I got Lynn in the fourth as well.
Goldschmidt has kind of been turning up. I took him instead of Vlad, which has hurt most of the season. Fortunately, Goldie has given some steals. I took Cedric Mullins in the 27th round. That's the O's bias. That's living 2 minute walk from the stadium. And Adam Wainwright in the 29th round. But I cut Wainwright 1 week into the season. So I'm looking at myself. I'm like, wow, I actually had a great last like 5-10 rounds.
Yeah.
And that's what's really propelled me, because I'm going to call a spade a spade. I missed on a lot of my early picks. I took Zach Plesac in the fifth over Zach Wheeler. I went against my gut. Me, David, and Cheesecake were in a group chat, and they're like, oh, but Plesac fell. Like, you go with your gut, but we take Plesac. I was like, okay, it's a bad pick there. I took Travis d'Arnaud in the 9th round. I know it's a two-catcher league, but I think that's something where I was really high just because of the Braves lineup and not because of how he's performed. And Alex Kirilloff in the 14th. Now, I know he hurt his wrist, and injuries you can't foresee, but Carlos Mercado was behind me and I just wanted to snipe him. You guys ever do that sometimes where you take someone because you know somebody else wants him and you don't even really want him that much?
Yeah. And I think that happens a lot, especially when you're home leagues, because you know everybody, you know what they want to get. And so you might, you know, overdraft as of right now. And this is going to be going on probably until Lance Lynn is done. But I think this may be the last time I get Lynn in the 4th round. I think those days are done.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially how he's looked this year. I mean, he's definitely going up higher. And my strategy, look, my first pick was Christian Yelich, and it was between him and Jose Ramirez. And that looks like the wrong pick for sure. But I wanted somebody that I felt like could contribute in all categories. And I think Christian Yelich was probably one of the biggest question marks. Had an awful year last year, the year before, had an MVP caliber season, somebody that could provide 30 plus home runs, 25 plus stolen bases, give you some batting average. I mean, I really expected the Brewers to take a step up, and they have this year. They're most likely going to win the NL Central, but a lot of it is on the backs of their pitching.
And I want to ask you, are you in on him next year, Yelich?
Christian Yelich?
Are you completely done with him?
I'm not done with him.
What's
but I'm
his
not
ADP,
spending,
though?
I'm not spending a top, like a first 2-round pick on him. If I can get him in the third, I think that's good value there because he's still relatively young, but I can't spend an early round pick on him. Like it's kind of the same thing with Cody Bellinger, where you're chasing the memories of what they were a year or two ago. But with the past we've seen in the year and a half sample size between this and the 60 game season last, I don't think you can justify an early pick on them anymore.
Yep. And I think it's going to be through each league, there's going to be at least one guy who's going to be like looking at Cody Bellinger in the 4th, 3rd round, and they're going to take him every time. And that's not going to be me.
Yeah.
Last night I went to a Cardinals game versus the Dodgers, and I didn't realize this. Cody Bellinger's OBP is worse than Albert Pujols' average.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
There's a funny meme going around. It's like the Dodgers have no holes in their lineup, and it's Cody Bellinger, and it's just like this huge like crater deep hole. And it's really unfortunate because, I mean, this was a guy that...
Pretty wild.
Like 2 years ago, I think he was second to Yelich in MVP, but... hit like 400 for the first month. And look, my strategy was similar to you guys. I figured with the pitching we saw with, you know, studs like Verlander and Strasburg and blanking on a couple others that had serious injuries ramping their arms up in the shortened season.
Yeah, Syndergaard,
that you needed to build pitching. So three out of my first five pitches, I went Flaherty, Lynn, and Plesac, thinking, okay, I can then push pitching on to the later rounds. And it's just kind of interesting. I know the Toby bat flip crazy strategy of pocket aces. Mm-hmm. A lot of people followed this year as well.
They did. And really quickly on that, Tanner Bell, who's number one overall, he did pocket aces. But listen to this. Although he did that, one of his pitchers was Shane Bieber. So he's pretty much operated without his best pitcher all year. And his fifth round pick was Marcell Ozuna.
Ooh. And
so.
So wait, who did he go? Who did he go? Who did he go the other pocket ace with?
Brandon Woodruff.
Okay. Yep. He probably hit well in the later rounds. Would have loved to have him on. Yeah. It's probably not his first year though, if he's number one overall.
No, he co-wrote the book, The Process. So you bet your ass, I will be reading that in the off season.
You're right. I'm gonna trust that. For real. And, but I want to talk about different pitchers now, and I want to talk about closers. And Marty, I want to start with you on this. Did you get pitchers early? Did you wait later? What was your approach? Because I know a lot of people, they chase saves like they do with steals.
Mm-hmm. For me, getting an elite closer was a top priority. So I got Chapman in the fifth round. For the first 2-3 months, that looked really good, right? And then we all know what happened. So he completely demolished my ERA. He gave up 18 runs within a few weeks span, which is pretty wild to see.
It would have been worse if he didn't get that triple play against the Athletics. And I know you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So
you'd probably be from like 102 to like 114.
I know. It would have been even worse. So Chapman, I still liked where, you know, when you look back at it, you know, I would have probably still taken him there, you know. The fall that he had this year was pretty brutal. And then in the 10th round, I got Brad Hand. So guessed wrong. Had him on the Mets now, middling reliever who's having a terrible year. All of the signs of his arm declining were there, and I saw that. But I thought Washington would be better. You know, and I didn't think they would literally sell everybody but Soto. So those making the decision to have Chapman in the fifth and Hand in the 10th made sure that I wasn't going to have an elite team down the stretch with all of the relievers in the back end who have given you 20-plus saves.
Now, let me ask you, because you took a couple closers early, did you try to get a setup men later that you thought had some chance? You know, the Emilio Pagans, I know Drew Pomeranz, like obviously Melanson is the closer, but I think before the season started, the Padres hadn't announced that, hey, somebody's going to be our guy. Did you try to take a flyer?
You know what? And that's actually something when we go over strategy, that's something I'm going to be a lot more in tune with. You know, not only the handcuffs, you know, if you want to use that football term on this day of the best closers, but also just, you know, when they say there's 2-3 people in the mix, you know, maybe taking the second best guy in the 25th round. I think that's going to be, that's what's enabled a lot of the best players to do really well this year, is to have those already on the roster on the back end so they could focus on their hitting throughout while they were streaming instead of wasting all of their fab. And we'll get into that later. But, you know, spending a lot of fab chasing saves can kill you.
No, that's certainly true. And anyone that spent a lot of money on Julian Merriweather and didn't even get a save out of him, they're probably hearing this. And they're,
I think it was $213 off the top of my head.
Oh man. Yeah. I think he went for like 250 in mine as well. And you know, what's crazy is, like I said, they didn't get a single save out of him. They blew.
No, I did not. No, he was on the IL before I blinked.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you spend like close to 20% of your budget, probably at the minimum, and you didn't even get any production out of him. Jordan, what about you with closers? What was your strategy?
Okay. So I want to preface this by saying closers were definitely my weak spot. I've only really played in like 10 or 12 team leagues, just roto with like somewhat leaders. Like, but I could usually find saves on the waiver wire. And I knew that was not going to be the case for TGFBI. So I was kind of at a loss of what to do. I felt confident that I could still kind of wait on closers, maybe get like one guy in the top like 12 rounds. was kind of counting on Trevor Rosenthal or Kirby Yates. And I was about to pick Trevor Rosenthal in the ninth round. I went with Dom Smith because Dom Smith was like my favorite player at the time. And then Rosenthal went with the next pick. And then Kirby Yates went like a few picks later. And then I really wanted Ke'Bryan Hayes. And then he went the pick before mine. And I was so upset. And I spent like 2.5 hours just staring at my screen, debating if I should take Trey Mancini or Will Smith. And this was a huge reach for Will Smith, but I really liked him and I really needed a closer. And I ended up going Will Smith, which after the draft was my biggest regret. But now in hindsight, it's like one of my best picks. So that's just a really weird event that occurred. And then I waited a long time, racked up a bunch of bats. I think that was the right call. I got like Justin Turner, DD Gregorius, James McCann in that territory. Of course, those guys didn't all work out, but I think if I just had pivoted to different bats instead, like AJ Pollock was in that range. There are a few guys that you can definitely pick out and would have made me look really good. I just picked the wrong ones. And then I took Joaquin Soria and Amir Garrett as my second and third closers. And then later I just grabbed some guys that are like, and maybe they'll do something. I grabbed Sean Doolittle in 24th. Obviously, he was like an immediate drop. And then I grabbed Jordan Romano in 27th. No reason. I just thought he was a good pitcher. Clearly, that worked out. He still doesn't have like that many saves, but he's been and one of my only good pitchers, so I'll take it.
Yeah, and Marty, I was going to say, Jordan, I like the process that you had with that. You know, I think sometimes you can't go wrong picking a player that you like, you know, just because of personal bias. There's obviously we look back and it's hindsight, but you never know how it's going to be, you know, whether injuries or just performance plays out. Marty, I'm with you. I took Brad Hand. And one of the things that I looked at for closers is their contracts. For the Nationals, they gave Brad a 1-year, $10.5 million contract. They're not going to have him in the setup role for that. Now, yep. Obviously, the Nationals haven't performed, and the metrics, you're right, they did look bad. But he gave you a good amount of saves at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
So, I think he
was one of the leaders at some point.
Yeah, and the strikeouts weren't there, and you know, being a Nationals fan and watching the games, they certainly were a little bit stressful. I also went with Will Smith. He signed a 3-year, $40 million contract with the Braves, and them being one of the front runners to come out of the NL, especially playing in a weak NL East, figured the Marlins weren't going to contend. As a Nationals fan, I knew they weren't going to be that good this year. The Mets always met. I figured that he was going to have a lot of save opportunities. And then I just took a lot of flyers later. I took the Emilio Pagans. I took Chad Green. I figured with Chapman, he always goes on the IL at some point. And I know that Zach Britton was starting the year out on the IL. I actually thought that he was going to get some save opportunities. I ended up having to spend more on him in Fab because I dropped him the week before Chapman went on IL. I was like, no, I have to get him back. So
and
I
then also, I don't know when you what pace your drafts went at, but Aroldis Chapman, actually, no. In all leagues, Aroldis Chapman was suspended for a few months. It was like, you can start Chad Green for that first weekend, maybe pick up a couple saves, and then just drop him. So maybe it was something like that for you. And that didn't work out.
Yeah, it's just, once again, it's the learning experience. You know, and once again, it's speculation. If you can get a cheap source of saves in the 20th round or, you know, in the last couple rounds, why not? You know, it's a dart throw at that point. First week of Fab, those are the most likely cut candidates. But speaking of that, I want to talk about your strategy with Fab, because for a lot of us, it's a very new concept of having a budget and deciding how much you want to spend, seeing how others. So Marty, walk me through your process of your first year having a budget with Fab.
Yeah. So, my first thing that I like to do is just kind of just see, be on Twitter, see what Vlad Sadler has to say. You know, he does a really good job.
Jeff Zimmerman as well.
Jeff Zimmerman does a really good job. Article. Yep, those two. So I look to them for guidance and kind of getting a better idea of the player pool. And I would suggest from even your novice players to the best players. They all do it. So make sure, you know, you check in on that. The strategy was, and what I felt like I was doing is I was just trying to keep up. So I kind of went already into, I spent a lot of money on saves, man. Blew a lot of money on it. And I would say probably
made a rain. A lot of money.
So I wouldn't recommend the chase saves, and that comes with building your draft. What I'm going to do at the back end of my drafts now is try to load up on those, you know, maybe the second tier closers, third tier closers, and just hope one of them hits, because then you'll be fine there. And then from like a hitting strategy, as you know, I do Between the Seams with Marty and Mac, brought to you by the Triple Play Fantasy Network.
Hey, there's the plug.
There it is, guys. Weekly, by the way, and we're still doing it. Anyway, so my goal is just like, you know, I tried to follow the actual hitters that I, you know, I did the research for, and I tried to follow that. And I did a lot better on the hitting side of it. I think just overall, you know, for next year moving forward, I'm going to have a better, like, you can pick up probably a hitter a week. I want to, or maybe every 2 weeks, just to get a hot bat in there and keep filling that person out. So I want to use one of my slots for that. But yeah, that was it. It was mostly trying to keep up with closers, which I failed miserably at, and then trying to pick up like the hot bat of the week.
So Marty, let me ask you a question. And this was actually, I was going to save it for our next one, but we saw during the trade deadline that, you know, people like Craig Kimbrel got moved. Are you going to try to be more aggressive post trade deadline? We see Tyler Clippard picking up some saves. Ian Kennedy got traded. So the Rangers had an open bullpen situation. Do you think that you might keep that same strategy, but just be different with the timing?
Yeah, what I think would be important is once you're in that four, you know, just a couple weeks before the trade deadline, just really understand the market of the players and who can possibly get dealt and who's more than likely to, and speculate, you know, pick up two of them, you know, from teams that you expect to get rid of their closer. And I think that would put you in a pretty good spot. And if you can do it the week or two before, it's going to save you a lot of money.
Yeah. And that's what the experts do. I know that. Casey Bubba did that in my league, looking ahead to see which pitchers have two start matchups, which ones have favorable. So that way, you know, you're really ahead of the curve, and especially you don't have to spend as much fab unless you have other people that are as proactive. Jordan, what about you? I know that, you know, being the first year having that $1,000 budget, especially being in high school, even if it's play money, that's a lot of money. How'd you go about it?
So, especially for a high schooler, I guess. I was pretty responsible with my money, I think. I did a bunch of like $10 to like $20 bids. My draft was terrible. I am completely at peace with that. But I kind of did an amazing job with fab, I think. So I did $10 bids here and there, usually like I had a huge list of just every person that I wanted, and I thought about all the claims, like, what if I get this person, then do I want that person? So I used all of NFC's, like, features there, and that was really fun for me. And I looked at schedules for starters and just, like, who's got a good schedule that people might not see coming. Like, I mean, it's an expert league guy that, like, I feel good about already, and then they also have a good schedule, so I put a few extra dollars on them. But basically what my fab strategy was is those small bids, nothing too significant, like probably nothing over $50, until after Alec Manoah's first start, and then I really, really splurged. I had you guys on the podcast right when that fab period, the Alec Manoah fab period was going on. And we were like, are we going to spend $400 on him? And I came out of that episode feeling really good about Manoah. Then 378, and I got him. And I actually have no regrets. I liked how it worked out. And I've just been getting to spend my $20-ish a week since then, usually less. But if there's a player that I want for 20, 30, 40, I can usually grab him. Some of the players that I did, and it's a pretty decent list. In week two, I got Michael A. Taylor, who doesn't really sound like that great of an addition, but he's been starting in my lineup.
He's streaky. He's a Nats fan. He's streaky.
Yeah. He had 11 homers and 12 steals with a 240 average. Like, that's not great, but I mean, he was like my fifth outfielder the whole year. In that same week, right before the no-hitter, I picked up Carlos Rodon, and he's been my ace the whole season. So
wow.
My draft was terrible. My draft was terrible, but I got Carlos Rodon. That was huge.
No, that's great to hear. And, you know, I will say I think my later picks and my fab really helped me. I was able to pick up Kyle Gibson, Mike Zunino when Travis d'Arnaud went down. I was able to get Jonathan India. Now, I will say I learned some tough lessons. I got very lucky. I didn't spend money early because I said, you know, none of the players on my team are injured. Let me give them a shot. Obviously didn't give Adam Wainwright a long enough chance. But I then felt the need to overspend. So like when Ketel Marte went down, I spent like $110 on Tim LaCastro. And I wasn't even a Tim LaCastro fan. I just felt like, okay, well, other people have spent money. I need to spend money as well.
Yep.
And that really plagued me later in the season. And I'm going to give another shout out to Bubba, but this time in the wrong sense. He cut Raisel Iglesias. Mm. And it was very interesting because I heard that sometimes people will do this as a strategy. And I don't know if this was his intent or not, where they will cut someone like that, knowing that somebody will spend a good amount of their fab money on them. And I think next year, having, you know, kind of like that Alec Manoah splurge, but saving it for a proven veteran, maybe somebody that, you know, is getting decimated by injuries and they just can't afford to keep someone, or maybe they're stacked in one position and they're lacking steals and they say, you know, I'll cut saves, I'll cut power because I need another category, and really just saving up and spending that. And I think the most important thing with fab is just being active. You know, as you mentioned, the Jeff Zimmerman article, Vlad, you know, there's a couple people in my league and you guys probably have the same. I know Cheesecake and David do as well. Some people don't spend at all. Like they haven't checked their teams. And instead of competing with 14 other guys, you're maybe competing with 10 or 11 others.
And so, that's what I was actually going to say. That was going to be 2 points. One of them is you have to like fit it into your lifestyle. Like, you know, and if you only give yourself 15 minutes on Sunday right before it closes, you're probably not going to do that well. Right. And so I think that if you chip away at it, maybe spend 20 minutes, you know, on Saturday, half hour on Sunday or whatever you have to do. But, you know, for the novice players that maybe haven't done fab yet, it's really cool and I actually like it and I want to keep it and actually institute it in more of my leagues. But you have to realize it's a lot more dedication than just clicking. There's so much strategy, you know, and the waivers, you know, they're just not there. And overall from my budget, what I learned from I think it was the Jeff Zimmerman article, if you plan on having a guy on your team the rest of the season, then that's when you spend more than $30 on him. If you just want him for a week or two, spend less than 30. And that's pretty much what Jordan did just on his own. I think I'm going to have to give him our family budget, see if he can work some stuff out.
I know, Jordan, you're the youngest out of us. You're in high school and you're frugal and you're smart with your money. And
yeah.
Marty and I, the quote unquote adults,
yeah,
just throw it around like it's nothing.
He's the kid that runs Monopoly, you know?
Tim LaCastro got a nice payday from me. He didn't even do anything to deserve it. It's Ketel Marte getting hurt. Marty, I want to talk with you.
I think behind Alec Manoah, my biggest bid was Kyle Finnegan for 43. I just was not
smart about it. You are smart about it. Marty, I want to finish out with you on our final thing. And we've kind of, you know, dabbled on this for the show. What would be your lesson learned that you would tell somebody in their first year of TGFBI next year? And what is your goal? Is it a certain place that you finish? Is it just feeling more confident, doing more research?
Yeah, good question. So the lessons learned, there's a whole bunch. And I think even over the next month, we'll even have a better idea, you know, and we'll learn a lot more. But overall, from a drafting standpoint, more starting pitchers and relievers on the back end. I found myself not needing, you know, 3 or 4 hitters on my bench. It was useless. And then I end up trying to flip them anyway, you know, to a pitcher. So, and Will Garofalo actually said this to me once we were done with our drafts. It was fun. He goes, did you mean the only draft however many pitchers I did? And I was like, oh shit. And I look back, I was like, oh, I guess I didn't do that. So on the back end, I would spend a lot more time on, you know, the Adam Wainwrights of the world that could just, you know, possibly change everything. The starting pitching's getting harder and harder. And then the closers. And then with the hitters, I was a little bit too conservative as I like looked through, you know, I got the Anthony Rizzos of the world, you know, and so
the steady Eddies.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, Jose Altuve kind of worked out in that way. He was discounted, and I got him, you know, I think in the ninth round. You know,
great but, pick.
Yeah, there was – I didn't have any guys that were going to – like a big splash. My biggest splash was Luis Robert in the third. That didn't work out too well. I ended up dropping him, and guess who got him? Tanner picked him up. So, and now he's using him against me. So, so the biggest thing would be to double up more on pitchers at the back end. And then honestly, just to be better at fab. I think it's something that it's an evolving thing. But it's something that, you're definitely going to pay a lot more attention to and try to get better with.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Do you have a certain place that you'd like to finish within next year? Top 100, top 50?
Yeah. So for an overall goal, number one is just connecting with this community. And that's the best thing about TGFBI. You know, I have so many group chats and, you know, on Twitter with people and people I don't even know, you know, like we're like Instagram friends, you know, and we're like, hey man, do you see this? You know, so number one, just learning more about the community, keep growing, keep working, you know, at getting better at fantasy. But from like an overall standpoint, I want to be number one next year, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you ain't first, you're last. Jordan, what about you? What are some lessons that you've learned and, you know, kind of what is your goal for next year?
Yeah. So of course I'm not doing this full time. I'm taking, I mean, high school and taking hard courses.
I'm so glad I'm done with school.
It feels close already and I'm only in my senior year, but, anyways, it's sometimes hard to get things done on time. Like I still, once we hang up on this call, I'm going to spend a lot of time on my fantasy football rankings before they're due tonight. My goal for fantasy baseball is to have my rankings, or at least preliminary rankings, done before TGFBI. Because going through the draft without rankings, I think really messed me up. Even if it didn't lead to like different decisions, I just spent an unhealthy amount of time pivoting on different players. Like every pick took me so long to just like click that button. It wasn't because I was unaware it was my pick. I knew exactly when my pick was when it was coming up. It just
getting
so
used
hard
to slow drafts, I think, is something we can all get better at.
This is the first slow draft I've ever done.
Yeah. No, yeah, I was like, yeah, exactly. So
yeah, so getting my rankings done. And I think that would help me in the draft, or at least give me like a more pleasant process, because that was kind of rough. Also doing mock drafts before it. I don't draft in early March. Like, why would I do any mock drafts? But I just didn't really do much preparation for TGFBI, and I definitely regret that, because I mean, I had my strategy, but I didn't really test it as much as I probably should have with the 15 team roto league. It's a whole different beast.
Yeah. And I think great point. I mean, Jordan, you know, I don't know what place you're in right now. Do you have a goal next year of where you'd like to finish?
Yeah, my place right now, we don't have to talk about it. It's really
bad. We won't.
but it's like, I was outside of the 400, top 400 when Luis Castillo was doing on my way up. Yeah, that was so, but right when I benched him, he had like two more bad starts and then he pulled it around. So I'm thankful for that at least.
And I was going to say, you know, if anything, you take a lesson from that, hold on to him. You know, just if you're thinking about cutting bait with someone next year that you spend an early pick on, and look, you can't trade in these leagues, you know, even though it kills your ratio, stick him on your bench and you know, ride out the tough period. I think for me, the number one thing that I'm learning is get your guy. And I think so, you know, there's so many people that are smarter than me out there. You know, the Justin Masons, the Dave McDonalds, the Vlad Settlers, Jeff Zimmermans, all of that. Doesn't mean they're going to be right about every single call. And I think about my taking Zach Plesac over Zach Wheeler because Dave McDonald was a huge Zach Plesac fan. And
throw Dave under the bus.
No. But look, I preface it by saying he's smarter than me.
But
it kind of played like subconsciously into my decision, because I'm thinking like, if he knows more than I do and he sees more in Zach Plesac than I do, I don't see anyone beating the Zach Wheeler drum. Zach Wheeler was just kind of a gut feeling, and it's something I should have gone with. So I think that's the number one thing, is to get your guy. I didn't mention this, but I got Chris Bateson in the 11th round. I got Chris Bassett in every draft this year because he's just somebody I think has been under the radar. I think the second thing too is to kind of know the tendency of the draft. If it's going very pitcher heavy in a 15 team league, you can't afford to wait. And I know for some people in football, they talk about, you know, if they zig, you can zag. Well, in a 15 team, 30 person or 30 round, 15 person league, it doesn't work like that. So you have to follow the trends as well. If closers are going early, you might have to reach for one. And I think the last thing that I've learned is just about fab with, and we had talked about with closers. If you're chasing saves, monitor that trade deadline. If there's somebody that's getting a lot more playing time, you know, batting at or plate appearances are king in this industry. You know, it's obviously it may, you know, lower the batting average on base percentage, but you have a greater chance for steals, for powers, for RBIs. Look, you know, this is our first year. We're not going to be perfect. I'm proud to say that I'm 82 right now. And at my highest, I was at 25, but I expect to be better next year. If I could finish in the top 50, you know, we said between us and triple play, one of us needed to finish in the top 100, and I'm beating David and Art, who write for Fantrax and take this more seriously than I do. So
here we go.
I'm taking pride in the fact that at least I'm the number one in this group, and then I beat you, Marty, because you're part of triple play.
Hey, we got another month left, man.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
I want to set my goal as well. So right now, I've actually moved up a lot. Like at the beginning of the season, I was in 400s. Now I was sitting at 350 for a while. Now I'm close to 300. So I'm definitely moving up.
Getting that top half next year. Getting that top 225. Yeah,
I think my goal next year, because I really, looking back on this today, I think that like my draft, if I had just taken different players at the same positions, it would have been such a nice draft. So I think top 100 is pretty realistic. Like I did a good job, I think. I'm pretty proud of that. I think 100's something I can accomplish next year.
Yeah. And look, you know, we're all smart minds in the industry. You know, we're all different ages, but I think the number one thing about being the first thing to being successful is having the passion and making sure that you're staying active. Like Marty said, not just waiting 9:45 to do your bids, but to make sure that you're putting in the time and effort. Great job, gentlemen. You know, we will be on this pod a year from now, maybe talking about how we did with year two. We're going to go to the fun part of the show. We're going to start with our question of the week. I don't have a soundboard, so I can't do anything fun like David does. But our question of the week is sponsored by Monkey Knife Fight. Pay attention to that ticker at the bottom. Use code TRIPLEPLAY for 100% deposit match up to $100. We've been grinding. Kevin Coleman has been killing it with his college picks. Brad and Sean Green have picks out for tonight's game. Brad and I are going to have picks for Sunday's game. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Hopefully we can win you some money. So our question of the week is, which player besides Ohtani could be the best at the other side of the ball? So Jordan, I'm going to start with you.
All right. My answer here, and I thought about this a decent bit throughout the week, just as like, I'm bored. I need something to think about. I thought about this question.
I'm glad you put time into it. Glad you didn't think of it on the spot.
My final answer, I've got Ke'Bryan Hayes.
Okay, you think he can pitch?
He seems like he would be a good pitcher. I don't know why. He's only 5'10". Like, it's definitely not realistic, but he's really lanky. I thought he was taller before I looked it up just now, to be fair. But I could see it. He just kind of has the feel of a pitcher. And it's really random since he's been really bad this season, but I could see he just kind of feels right. I'm interested to hear who you guys have there.
All right. Well, Marty, hopefully you didn't take my guy. Who are you going with?
I'm going to go with Lance Lynn, baby, because earlier this year he ripped a single and got a run scored. It was absolutely amazing. And I feel like with that body, he is designed to hit bombs all day. He might bat 195, but I felt like, you know, if he just, you know, he focused in all of his fastball craziness and he just put that in the hitting, he could do it. He's the man.
You know what? That's not a bad answer because you and I are on the same page. Like, Lance Lynn, I don't think is on any social medias, but I think our dream is just that he acknowledges us one day. I mean, Lance Lynn could literally chug a beer and be like 10 beers deep, say I'm sober, go out and crank a home run with the opposite, you know, batting lefty. For me, it's Jacob DeGrom. And he started this year batting 12 of 31. So he had 414 for his first 31 plate appearances. Now, obviously, he probably won't play again this year, but he finished with a 364, 394, 758 triple slash. He had six RBIs. He has three home runs for his career. So for his career, these are his stats in 8 years. 204 batting average, three homers, 29 RBIs, a stolen base, 17 walks. So I think about how many pitchers can hit the Taiwan Walkers that literally just go up there and take pitches and, you know, will walk back to the dugout. I mean, if Jacob DeGrom is having one of the best seasons pitching of all time with, excuse me, he's pitching with a 1.08 ERA. Imagine his hitting stats if he put as much time into that craft.
That's and I true. Wonder if he, how many. If he spent, oh, go ahead.
That would be. If he spent time on it, he could be like actually really good.
Yeah.
He's something. And I'm wondering how many, how many base on balls he's earned himself compared to how many he's given away. I wonder what that percentage is.
So there was a stat this year. I'm trying to remember, and you know, obviously it's not going to sound good since I don't have it officially, that he had walked more last year four times than he did in like his first 10 outings. It was something ridiculous like that.
And it's going to be one of the biggest shames of all time that he wasn't able to finish this year out.
I know.
You know, I know. I had him in a few leagues, and I mean, it's bigger than that, you know, to be able to see what he was doing. And you know, he needs to get off the Mets, man. I'll just say it, dude. Nothing good happens there, man.
Exactly.
It's just like the Lions and football. It is what it is, man. I love Detroit. I live in Detroit. It is what it is. You don't come to the Lions to win. You don't go to the Mets to win.
Yeah. No, that's very true. And I think fingers crossed for whatever team Jacob DeGrom is on next year that he's just healthy, because baseball's better when he's in it. Good talk, gentlemen. Yeah. We're going to go to the last part of the show, and it's the question of the week. Or I'm sorry, the game of the week. So I played this a couple weeks
really
ago.
Really quickly, I have one word to say about Jacob DeGrom. Since his like real breakout in 2018, he has a 5.3% walk rate pitching. And let me see. Batting in his career, he has a 4.0 walk rate. That's a 1.3 point difference.
There it
that's
is.
Just crazy.
It sounds like a video game stat, but just shows how dominant Jacob DeGrom is. Going back to our game of the week, and we played this a couple weeks ago with David and Micah from Fantasy Central. David said it was a bad game, and that's just because David sucks. So what I have is, for each team, have the last person that finished either within the top five in Cy Young voting or the top five in AL or in MVP voting. So, for example, I'm not going to use this one, but if I said, give me the last Seattle Mariner to finish top five in the MVP voting. The answer was Robinson Cano, and in 2014. You don't have to give me the year. You just have to give me the player. So I'm going to give you the category and the team. You're going to buzz in with your name. If you get it right, you get a point. If not, the other person has a chance to guess. We're going to do whoever gets 3 points first. Any questions?
Okay, let's go.
All right. Tell me the last pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays to finish in the top five of Cy Young voting.
Marty. R.A. Dickey.
Incorrect. Jordan.
I'll just take a guess. Marcus Stroman?
Both of you. Incorrect. It was Hyunjin Ryu. Last year, he actually finished number three.
He was good last year.
He was good last year. All right. Give me the last Oakland Athletics player to finish in the top five of MVP voting.
Jordan. Marcus Semien.
That's correct. Marcus Semien in 2019. Good job. So we got Jordan with one, Marty with zero. Okay. Give me the last Kansas City Royal to finish top five in the MVP voting.
Marty. Zach Greinke.
Incorrect. Jordan.
Mike Moustakas.
Incorrect. Lo Kane. 2015. Okay. All right. Give me the last Baltimore Oriole to finish in the top five the AL MVP voting.
Marty.
Jordan.
Marty.
Why can't I remember his name? Chris Davis.
Chris Davis is incorrect. Jordan, we're going to you.
Adam Jones.
That is also incorrect.
It was Manny Machado, wasn't it?
It was Manny Machado.
Damn it. I knew.
Maybe this game does suck. I thought this would be a little bit easier, but
I like the game.
So many options.
It's not the game's fault.
You guys are doing better than David was, so I can say that. All right, the next one. Give me the last Texas Rangers pitcher to finish top five in the Cy Young voting.
Jordan. Lance Lynn?
That's correct. Marty, I was trying to give you a gimme on that.
I was like, he was the first guy that popped in my head, but I was like, no, he wouldn't make it that easy.
I was trying to tie it 1-1. All right, Jordan, you get one more and the game is over. All right. Give me the last pitcher for the Los Angeles Angels to finish in the top five of Cy Young voting.
Marty. Jared Weaver.
Jared Weaver. There we go. That's a throwback name
Who's top five?
Jared Weaver in 2012. So we got Marty on the board with one, Jordan with two. The next one. Give me the last Minnesota Twins hitter to finish in the top five of MVP voting.
Marty. Nelson Cruz.
Incorrect. Jordan for the win.
I feel like I should know this. It's going to be someone that is like Brian Dozier.
Incorrect. Joe Mauer. Got to go back to 2009. All right.
I would not have gotten that.
Give me the last hitter for the Yankees to finish in the top five of MVP voting.
I'll go Aaron Judge.
Incorrect. Marty.
Wow.
It's not Stanton. I'll go Stanton. I don't know.
Incorrect. Giancarlo Stanton can't stay healthy. I would never give him credit. I would never give him credit on this podcast. It's DJ LeMay. Who finished in the top five last season?
Yeah. They'll let you know how many Yankees games I watch.
That's true. Mm-hmm. All right. We still have 2-1.
This is going to be an hour and a half podcast by the time we're done. I like this.
I know. I feel like that's why I did three. Last time I did five and I had to cut it down. Give me the last pitcher for the Oakland A's to finish in the top five of Cy Young voting.
Marty.
Jordan.
Marty.
Barry Zito.
Incorrect. Jordan.
Frankie Montas.
Incorrect. Sonny Gray, 2015.
Yeah, Frankie Montas was like a half season.
Yeah. And then he got busted. All right. Give me the last Pittsburgh Pirate pitcher to finish top five in the Cy Young voting.
Marty. Is it Gerrit Cole?
It is Gerrit Cole.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Back in 2015, probably his only good year with the Pirates. All right, so we got a 2-2 game. This is what I wanted. Let me see which one I want to go to next. All right. Give me the last Philadelphia Phillies hitter to finish top five in the MVP voting.
Marty.
Ryan Howard for the win back in 2009. came back from a deficit. Marty, I don't have the applause on there. I'm going to clap for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I thought about saying
Ryan Howard, and then I was thinking.
I thought somebody was going to say.
I had the Subway commercial in my head, dude. I was ready, man.
So, Marty, let me go to you first. First of all, congrats on the victory. I don't know if this is the first one you have on the pod.
I think it's the first time.
All right. Well, here we go. Since we already brought up virginity once, you broke the virginity of triple play lack of wins. So, Marty, first, let me give you your FaceTime 30 seconds. Tell the audience where they can find you, any stuff you're working on, anything that projects,
Yeah. So, well, first, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to, to sit down with you guys, talk about baseball. You can find me on Twitter at Marty_Tallman, as you see here in front of me. I do the Between the Seams. It's basically a YouTube video for YouTube for Triple Play, where we go through six hitters and pitchers each week that will help provide you the boost that you need. So watch it. It will help you out with FAB. It will help you out in your 10, 12 team leagues, all of it. And you can find them here at Triple Play Fantasy.
I just got to give them a quick shout out. You know, look, I had David's wedding. I do stuff. Rain, shine, holiday, regular day, morning, night. Marty and Mac do Between the Seams. I mean, this man got up at 5 a.m. to record with Christian. So if that isn't dedication, I don't know what is. Jordan, I also want to thank you for coming on. Can you tell the audience where they can find you, some of the stuff you're working on?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me at FOV Sports on basically any social media. I definitely spend the most time on Instagram. I put out 2 posts per week, fantasy baseball, fantasy football. If you're watching on video, here
there it is.
Make sure, FOV underscore sports.
Yep. And I definitely spend a lot of time making the graphics so that they're aesthetically pleasing, but also like good quality things that I actually think about and like work on spreadsheets. And you can find my podcast, Field of Vision Sports, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Just once a week, I have some sort of expert on. I think next week I have Derek Carty of ESPN.
Oh, that's then, good. That's nice.
Jen Piacenti in 2 weeks.
She was supposed to come on today, but obviously football coming on. Jen's great.
Yeah, so it just people like that. Triple Play guys have been on once. Just various experts come on every week, and we just talk about whatever's relevant at that time. So yeah, Instagram and the podcast; those are the things I spend the most time on.
And as the season's dwindling down, and we come into football season for you baseball fans that are listening, enjoy the next few weeks. It's going to be a long off season. Actually, what am I saying? We got playoffs after that. I want to give a special shout out to the Triple Play Baseball Show. David and Art aren't here right now. This is our 99th episode, and we're going to have a very special thing coming for our 100th. For our listeners, Art, aka Lil Cheesecake, is going to come back for it. It's something we're really looking forward to. We don't want to give away too much, but just the fact that we've had the support we've had through the past year and a half getting through the pandemic, we're really excited to hit this milestone. So for everybody listening, make sure you enjoy another week of baseball. After listening to this, you better get on your FAB before 9:45 on Sunday. And to steal David's quote, we're going to make like a bread truck and all these bums. Catch you guys next week.